What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I am your host, Brett McGrath, and this is Auction Talk featuring my man, Nick, at The Worst Sports Cards. This is Auction Talk number 9, I believe. We are having fun recapping auctions, talking about players, and doing all those things we do every week. The feedback for this show has been awesome. Appreciate it. If you are looking to consign your cards, do it with Nick. He has a promo code, STACKING93. The link is in the show notes to give you a 93% payout on a consignment with Nick. He's slanging cards over here for the people. Use them. This conversation was fun. I love talking about the Premier Auction. I also enjoyed talking about how Premier Auctions are only a space where like 1% of us can play. So how do we think about the results of Premier Auctions when we're not doing the bidding? Lots of good content in here. Hope you're enjoying this. All right, is it time to kick it? Yeah, I think so. Let's kick it over to the conversation. Welcome back to everybody's favorite podcast. This is Auction Talk. I got my man Nick at The Worst Sports Cards. I was looking at the agenda literally right up until it's fun. So again, well, I try to like do some prep work to this on Friday and I'll ship it over to Nick. And there's some time where it marinates and then Nick gets in typically on Monday. And I'm just looking at it. I'm always just like, man, there's a lot we have to talk about. So I was like peeking while working today at like year notes. And I was like, this is going to be a doozy, especially with this Premier Auction that just ended, which I know you've covered a little bit and I want to talk about, but I have to ask you, how's it going? We talked about junk food last time. Maybe we'll figure out a new exciting topic, but how was your weekend? Are you doing okay?
I'm good, man. You just exposed my my procrastinating tendencies where I get this doc on the podcast, you know, like you said, Thursday or Friday. And every week I'm like, all right, I'm going to get ahead of this Thursday or Friday. And then I always get the busiest on Thursday or Friday, usually with the newsletter is usually what bogs me down. And then Monday, I'm like, I got to get up early and get some stuff in this doc so Brett can take a look. But it keeps you on your toes, right? I think it keeps these episodes a little bit.
It does
a little bit. You know, catch us as we go type thing. So that's good. But I'm good, man. We did junk food last week. I've got sliced apples in a beef stew for a snack while we do this episode. Got to keep those blood sugar levels in check. I'm ready to roll though.
I love it. I do want to. We had a glaring omission from junk food talk last week, and I actually got a DM about it. So I'm going to thank Kevin M. Cormier for his message to me. And he was having beef, pun or no pun intended, whichever way you want to roll, with our omission of nachos. He's like, ooh, where's nachos? Ooh. And I felt like a knife through my heart because I was like, I love nachos. And how did we leave nachos out? So maybe like 1 minute. Thoughts on nachos? Is this a snack that you enjoy? Where does it rest amongst the rest?
Big nacho fan, but it's something I don't have often, which I think it keeps the allure for me by having it a little bit less frequently. But there's a really good nacho place here. It's a pizza and Mexican place, which is an interesting combo, but they have like the best nachos. So yeah, it's definitely on the junk food list. What about you?
I love them all day long. They're up when I dream about junk food, nachos are on there. As a matter of fact, my wife was doing something this weekend. I was at home with the kids basically. And I looked at my toddler and I said, Jolene, what do you want for dinner tonight? I was like, full control. We're getting delivery. My daughter looked at me and I just died laughing. It's not like we go here and I don't even know where this came from, but she just looked at me and said, Daddy, I want Taco Bell.
Yes. So
I said, I want Taco Bell too. So let's get Taco Bell. And there was the nachos Bel Grande in that mix with the Supreme Tacos and the cheesy gordita crunch and every, and I, after it, I was like, I probably shouldn't have eaten all that. But when your toddler says she wants Taco Bell, it kind of resonated with me in that moment.
Yeah. Taco Bell's usually it's one of those places where it's like, you could go from really excited to like a little bit embarrassed and disappointed all within 24 hours. And you can get like 30 pounds of food for like $11. So that's what I love about Taco Bell.
100%. Taco Bell, I know Kyle at the Wax Museum has been yearning for you to be a sponsor. But if you want to be a sponsor of Auction Talk, we've got some placement. We'd love to have you. Let's start here with the Premier Auction. I got your email, which I loved you covering that, which I want to get into that. But before we get into kind of some of the results, one of the things that I was thinking about at the conclusion of this auction or Premier Auction was the fact that this is such like a magnifying force and there are so many story posts, all this content around it. But then I started to think about it. It's like, how many people out there that are like listening to this and that are we're engaging with on Instagram are actually participating? And I thought like, man, it's got to be such a small pool of people who are actually going after the cards just because we saw the price of the Wimby. I mean, that's not everyone can buy a $500,000 Wimby card. So how do you think about something like a Premier Auction and just like the common collector? And like, I don't know, it just feels like we as a hobby index so heavily on that because they're big sales, which are exciting. And we like to talk about big sales, but I don't know, like, how do you think about the balance there between like going full overboard, spending all this time talking about it, knowing that maybe there's only a small percentage of people that are listening to this that actually bid on cards in that?
For sure. It's a good question. It's a fun question to think about because it does get a lot of coverage. You get, you know, most of the coverage from the auction houses and from the content, like the real content creators that are kind of, you know, call them paid content creators. They're creating content on the big cards, right? Usually the elite auctions, the premier auctions, all the biggest cards. So it's hard not to pay attention to them and like, you know, consider them at least. I do think regardless of what you collect or what values you collect or who you collect, I think it's important to follow what happens in these auctions of big cards because I think there's a lot you can pull from a lot of these cards, regardless of what you collect and what values you collect. Like, I mean, like we're going to talk about some of these cards in the next segment or later in more detail, but like you look at a card like the Peyton Manning Exquisite Shield Auto, which we'll talk about more in detail, a card that did 60,000 in the auction, 2X what it sold for 2 years ago. So there's a lot of things to dissect there. And if you collect, like you, if you collect football cards, quarterbacks, autos, shield autos, patch autos, logo man autos, that card has some type of I don't want to say impact, but there's something you can learn from the sale of that card if you collect so many different segments of cards. Like, for instance, that card was his only exquisite shield auto. So like that played into why it sold for so much. So if you collect, you know, logo man autos from the last 2 to 3 years, you know, understanding why that exquisite sold for what it did, it might help you in your journey of logo man collecting over the next 10 years and trying to figure out which of these, you know, today, which of these hundreds of logo man autos are going to be important 15 years from now. Cause there was a time when that Peyton Manning exquisite shield auto did sell for a price that most people could afford. You know, it probably did sell for $1,000 at one point, whether that was, you know, 15 years ago, I think it came out 16 years ago. So whether that was 14 years ago, 12 years ago, 8 years ago, it was probably a point where it sold for an affordable price for the majority of the hobby. So I think it's important to follow the big sales, the sales that go down a lot, and just try to segment that card out into how that could apply to what you collect and help your decisions moving forward.
I think we talked about this like one of the first episodes, but thinking about, I think a lot for many of us, we buy cards that we love and we connect with and we can afford in this era of collecting. And there's this hope, right? There's this hope that we purchase cards that satisfy our collecting lanes for an affordable price and we hold on to these cards. And then 16 years later, these are the types of cards that people are after in premier auctions. And that is like the success story. But the fact of the matter is like most of the times it's like we're consolidating, moving cards, and it's just not the reality. So I think about this a lot. And I guess when we see these results, if we're a collector who's, you know, spending $1,000 is a ton of money. Like, should seeing those types of results be discouraging to us, or do you think that should be motivating, or maybe a mixture of both? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it depends on your situation. I think it can be a mixture of both. I think it's important to, pay attention to how people react to the sale prices. I think that's good information. If people, because people will tell you how they feel about how much a card sells for. So you'll know if that sale price was crazy in a good way or crazy in a bad way. And it can help kind of help you with your collection. But I also think, like, I think it's a dangerous game when you try to correlate like that Peyton Manning Shield sale to all Peyton Manning cards or all football cards or all Shield autos. Like, I think that's a tricky line to walk on. But there is pieces, regardless of what card it is and what price it sells for, there's pieces from most of these big cards that sell that you can take and apply to how you collect.
I think it's funny already seeing some of these sales go down, and then individuals who collect it, that player or whatever, talking about other cards that they have. Is that, that's like unstoppable, right? If there's a big sale of a player, like, it doesn't matter if it's the same type of card, adjacent cards, people are going to go share their cards. And I get it in a way, but I also, I don't know, like, does one card impact an entire player's catalog, or is that not relevant at all, like, based on the way you look at things?
I don't think it does. like let's look at the biggest card selling right now, the MJ Ultimate Logo Man auto selling with Golden. It's already at like $1.5 million. A lot of people would say that's MJ's best card in existence, but if it sells for $20 million, which it won't, but let's just say a crazy number, is that really going to lift up the whole MJ market? That's probably a good example, because the MJ market is kind of segmented. There's the 90s collectors, there's the patch auto collectors from like the exquisite stuff. So there's kind of different segments of MJ too. And that really applies to all players. Like, staying on the Peyton Manning example, not everybody collects Peyton patch autos. Some people only like refractors. Some people only like rookie cards. Some people only like non-rookie cards. So I don't think it does lift up or bring down an entire market. But there's times where maybe a lot of cards of a certain player sell over a few months in this high-end category. And that, you know, there's some information there that could suggest maybe that player's market is going to go up or down. But I think it's hard to tie one massive sale to, you know, bringing up or bringing down an entire player's market.
That makes sense to me. And I feel in a similar way. I want to get into some of the, it'll be a week that this auction will have closed by the time this episode goes live. Obviously, we're recording it a little bit in advance, but based on like the results, like, what do you think some of the top storylines are from this auction, or things that you want to spend some time talking about?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll talk about three cards. There's a lot of ways you could go here. Well, four cards, I guess. Got a hit on the Barry Sanders Gen Master 101, the 98. Ended up being the highest selling 90s football card that we've ever seen, which didn't really surprise anybody. I think everybody kind of saw that coming. It did 168,000, which, talked to a lot of people. Some think that's right. Some people think it was a little low. Some people thought it was going to go for over 200. I could kind of see the arguments for every angle there. It's kind of a tricky card. 101s are a different beast. They're kind of hard to predict. But the previous high sale in the 90s football market was the Jerry Rice PMG Green PSA 6. Really the second and third highest selling card. It sold for 150 in October 2022, and then it sold for 99,000 in August of 23. So it's really the number two and number three highest selling card. The Brett Favre PMG Green PSA 7 did 78,000 in June 2022. And then the Peyton Contenders Rookie Ticket Auto PSA 10 did just under 72K back in January 2019. So interesting to see kind of that top four or five, however many cards I just reeled off, list of 90s football card sales. I think if a Peyton Contenders PSA 10 auto sold today, it might climb that list, I would think. But yeah, what really stuck out to me was the 101 concept. I mentioned it being a different beast. There's a lot of people that would rather have the Barry Rice PMG Green than the Barry Rice Gem Master 101. And I think that's super interesting.
You did what I did. You said Barry Rice.
Did I say Barry Rice?
It's a disease.
Gosh darn it. Barry Rice, Barry Sanders, PMG Green. Hey, I'd take a Barry Rice PMG Green.
Me too.
The Barry Sanders PMG Green. There's a lot of people that would rather, like, that is their Barry Sanders grail card. Some even said the 98 credentials now. I think Barry's is out of like 7 or 9 or something like that. It's really low. Some people said that's their grail. 101 sometimes to people is so rare that it's like they don't collect them because they couldn't collect enough because they're so rare, if that makes sense. So I think that whole 101 concept is interesting, and it's not, you know, just because it's a 101, it's a PMG, which is the premier 90s product. You would just think everybody would have that as their biggest Barry Sanders car, but it's not the case, and I think that's interesting.
It is interesting. I just think about like what a sale like this can do. And I think about like, obviously the Barry Sanders collectors are super passionate. I think the Jerry Rice collectors are super passionate. And it's like, I can see this angle where the Jerry Rice collectors are saying, well, Barry Sanders shouldn't have the highest selling car of the 90s. It should be a Jerry Rice car. So like when this type of debate happens, you mentioned the Peyton PSA 10 contenders. It seems like whenever there's one of these monster sales in a specific segment and category, like 90s football cards, it's only a matter of time that someone doesn't toss another one of these grenades out and see how big of a boom it can. So I think my big storyline on this is what's next? Like what's coming out? Because that's going to be a signal to someone who's holding something adjacent to the Barry Sanders card. So I think that's the fun part.
That's a really great point. That will definitely happen, and that's something to keep an eye on. I think if that card would have cleared 200, I think we'd see more of those grenades being tossed out. I wonder, as crazy as it sounds, $168,000 is a ton of money, but there's some people that were like, I thought it would do more. So they might hold on to some of that stuff, but those rare cards that never surface are fun to watch in auction, so I hope some of those do surface, but I also... part of me hopes they don't and kind of keep that allure of some of these cards that never surface.
I feel like we could literally go down the list and talk about this the entire episode, and I don't want to do that, but I want to hit Wimby. I want to hit the Wimby Black Shimmer just because it's the front page of the news. Now, what I want to talk about, and I saw your note, and I think you're maybe alluding to this based on, I think I heard crossover guys talking about this. This card, this sale price, I think a lot of people are like, man, this gives me like pandemic vibes, just like prospect going to the moon on a card. Obviously, Wimby validated it with just a sensational rookie year. But we all saw the one of one black and the Kurtz card care deal with PSA. Like, do you think that like 5 second sound clip added value to this Black Shimmer sale? Because of the black being manipulated in a way or perceived to be manipulated by all of us. Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw that out there. And I think it's an interesting argument. If people are going to assume that the black 101 is altered, does this Black Shimmer 101 become Wemby's best card? Because he's not, he's got an exclusive with, is it Upper Deck? I don't even know. He's not going to sign cards for Fanatics, as far as we know. So he's not going to have RPAs and rookie autos from what we know. So Prism is really the product for his rookie cards. So does this become his best card if the black 101 Prism is altered? I think that's what people are arguing is as to why this did $500,000, which I guess it makes sense. Like I look at a guy that I collect like Jokic, who part of the value of his cards is due to the lack of selection of high quality products. So a little bit different now since there's so many products printed. But I see that argument. I will tell you this, like I want to buy a Wemby card. I really, really do. And I bid on some recently and I missed them. And so there's something there. Like, I think his prices are insane. I also think he's just different and I want to buy him for some reason. I'm going to be smart about it, but there's something to that. So I don't know. There's a lot to unpack from that sale. I want to ask you one question before I say what I'm going to say next. What is a better card to you if it existed? That Black Shimmer 1/1 or his NT, his true NT patch auto out of 99?
With the no auto on the
NT? No, with the, if it existed with the auto.
Oh, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm taking the Black Shimmer all day, okay, every day, just because I like chromium-based products more and yeah, especially with the way NT goes. I think if you're taking the black 1/1 off the board and you want to have a fun conversation, to me it would be, which we haven't seen, would be what's a better card between the Black Shimmer and the Nebula out of choice.
Yeah.
Which I would probably say Nebula. I would probably say it goes black 1/1, taking all the controversy out, Nebula, then Shimmer. So I think this would be his third best card in this run of rookie cards.
So the reason I bring up that NT question is because if you look at Zion, like, we all remember the Zion hype. We haven't seen his black 1/1s rookie cards sell at auctions, as far as I know. He had an NT patch auto out of 99 sell for over $500,000 in 2022. So this
bless sale, the seller of that card,
right? When you look at a sale like that, and 2 years later you look at this Wemby sale, like, it doesn't, as crazy as it sound, it doesn't sound crazy. We've seen this before. It's just a matter of, okay, you know, what is he going to produce on the floor, and where will prices go from there? But it's an interesting card, interesting sale because of the dynamics of his rookie card market. But I don't think it's as insane as it appears to be on the surface.
So I want to make sure, I think, just to clear this up, Wemby has no autos in Panini products, but Wemby has autos in, will have autos in Fanatics slash Tops, because, and I'm no expert in this, but I'm assuming based on the Bowman Chrome stuff and the autos being there, I think that's the deal. If we're wrong, like, come yell at us. I'm not an autograph expert, but I follow it loosely.
Yeah, no, I'm not an expert on it either. And honestly, I do so little, like, ultra modern. I don't know the details of this, but yeah, there's something with his autos and lack of them that caused this sale price.
Let's talk about Worf's auctions and kind of what closed and how cards did based on what we talked about last week.
Yeah, so we sold 47 cards, so not a lot of cards, but they did $53,142. So pretty good number there, over $1,000 per card. The cards we talked about last week, the Reggie Miller 24-karat gold did $7,500, which was an impressive sale because that exact copy sold on eBay for $7,377 in February, which, when you see a card like that, super rare, exact same copy, sell twice within 2 months. The second sale is almost always lower than the first sale. So the fact that it did more was impressive. The 21 Joe Burrow Select Tiger Prism PSA 9 did $1,230, about where I thought that card would be. The 2015 Jokic Revolution Angular PSA 9 did $312. Last three sales of that were 274, 235, and 295. So a little bit up on that sale. It did, you know, it happened Sunday. They played Saturday and he had a really good game. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. The 2010 Gronk Topps Chrome Variation rookie card PSA 9 did $312. A PSA 9 copy sold for $93 in June. I talked about that last episode. It was kind of a weird picture, and the auction the year before did like 550, so I don't know if something happened with that auction for it to only do $93, but take that sale with a grain of salt. And then the last one was the 2012 Tiger Woods Jack Nicklaus, the game use gloves, I think it was a BGS 9, did $162. So that one I want to touch on really quick because it sold in October, that exact card, on a bin on eBay for $675. So it sold for way less than it was bid for. And I always think that's a super interesting conversation. Like, what's the truer market value of a card, a bin or an auction? I'm auction all day because I think the competition comes out, understanding that card is not going to be there after that auction ends. Like if it's on a bin, there's not as much urgency, right? It can sit there for a week. It's going to sit there until it sells, but it's an auction creates some more urgency on the card. But when it's a lot less at auction, I think you're seeing the truer value of the card. I think somebody just reached on that bin, to be honest. And to be fair, like, it happens both ways. We had a Pedro Martinez Rubies PSA 6 that was binned for like $2,000 within the last couple months, did over $3,000 at auction. So it goes both ways. But curious what your thoughts are on the whole bin versus auction. What do you prefer as a seller yourself? And what do you think really represents the market in a more true way?
I'm the most impatient human being of all time. So my preference is always going through the process of going and putting cards up for auction, because I don't want the card. I don't want the cards to just sit there and wait for someone. I find more joy in knowing that there's a definitive time that these cards are, like, when this is going to be over and when I'm going to be able to get my money. So I'm all auction all day. Also, I think just like auction brings so many more people to the party, right? They are interested in, because they might say, oh, this card is right now a lot less than I'm anticipating, so I might put in a bid here and there. You're not like, you're going to put cards up for auction that are going to be lower than the previous comp. You're going to put cards up for auction that are going to be higher than the previous comp. But I don't know. For me, there's something special about auction. I honestly, Nick, I, outside of maybe like a buddy who needed a card that I had and I was looking to raise funds for another card and just sold it to a buddy, I couldn't tell you the last time I listed a card for a buy it now. And so that's my preference and my strategy typically.
I'm the same, man. I don't have the patience. I try, like, even recently I've tried putting stuff on bin. It's more for me to like to try to be patient with selling the card, and like, I don't have to sell this now, so I'll just put it on a bin for a little bit higher than it's probably worth and see what happens. But I just get annoyed when nothing happens on it. So I'm like, I'd rather just not even have it up for sale, or if I want to sell it, I'm just going to auction it so that I know that it sells.
The part of it too, and why is the reason why I send my cards to consignment, is I don't want to manage the back and forth communication with anonymous people. I don't want to deal with the low ball offer. I don't care. I literally, like, I want to sell cards to get money to buy cards, and all these steps in between, I just want to cut out of my life. So to me, auctions streamline all of that. So that's my personal choice. And hell, this is not called bin talk. This is called auction talk.
Yeah. What's a bin, man? I'm sorry I brought that into this podcast.
I'm glad you brought it up though. I want to get into talking about someone who we've talked about maybe on the first five or six episodes consistently, but now seems like an appropriate time. Let's talk about Caitlin Clark again. Dude, I sat there on Monday night. I know the Fever picked one, and I know Caitlin Clark went number one, but I ended up sitting and watching the entirety of the WNBA draft. And like, my wife came up and she was like, oh, you're still watching this? I'm like, yeah, I'm still watching this. And I don't know if it was like the fact that like they had an audience and there was like a presentation or what it was, as my music is going nuts in here. But I don't know. It's just like the Caitlin Clark effect is so real. And seeing her come to Indy, and I literally was driving my kids to school and looked in Gamebridge and saw like the Welcome to Caitlin Clark banner, Welcome to Indy Caitlin Clark, and all her graphics and stuff. And we're talking about, it's like the playoffs are going on right now, and we're talking about Caitlin Clark here in the city. And my wife asked me, she's like, what do you want for your birthday? My birthday's next month. Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to talk about my birthday gift. I don't need anything. And then, you know, a week later, I'm like looking at the Fever calendar and I'm like, you know what? Like, there's a game on my birthday. Like, and so like, I'm like, I want to go see her. And so it's like, I can't remember being so infatuated by a player and what's possible. And obviously like Nike believes it too. Like there's a lot of people out there lining up to pay their money. And so this to me, the momentum with what she's doing in the last, like, you know, 3 to 6 months has, I cannot remember outside of like maybe Michael Jordan, like in the way Jordan captivated hearts and minds. I can't like, this is like, look at what Patrick Mahomes just did. Like, look at what he's just done. And this is like way over, like from a mainstream perspective, this is like beyond that. And I don't know. I just think we're like, I don't want to be too hyperbolic because I'm a fan and she's playing on my team. And part of me is like, is this because she's in my city or what? But I just think this is really, really freaking cool. And undeniably, she has a deal with Panini. She's signing autographs. Can you imagine that WNBA product when that drops? Like, what is that going to do for that segment of the market? It's going to be insane. So I had to throw Caitlin Clark back in the mix. I'm still working on trying to get her on Auction Talk so we can talk about her cards, but wanted to lobby that one out there and see if you had anything to say. I know we've talked a lot about her.
Yeah, man. Rightfully so though. Like it's refreshing to hear your enthusiasm, like from the perspective that you come from living there in Indy, like getting to experience it firsthand. I read some cool stuff. As a Washington Redskins fan, this made me so happy. Caitlin Clark jersey, she sold more jerseys her first week after getting drafted than the Dallas Cowboys sold all year last year. So just a little jab at the Cowboys whenever I get the chance is always a win for me. But that just kind of demonstrates the hype behind her. Like, I think it is real, man. Like, she has the chance to elevate that entire league. You know what I mean? Like, take that league to the next level. Like, we've had some talented players coming into that league over the last few years, some really exciting players, but for whatever reason, none of them had the kind of aura that she has, and the following that she has. And I mean, it's serious. She could take this league to the next level because I'm talking like salaries and everything, because jersey sales, like these players are going to make their money off ticket sales, jersey sales, and that type of stuff. That's what's going to take the league salaries and then the league itself to the next level. Like, think about 10-year-old girls. If they see WNBA players making $1 million a year, $2 million a year, instead of like Caitlin Clark, number one pick, making $75,000 a year, it might kind of sway them on their sports choice decisions and how serious they might want to take a sport like basketball. And make a serious career out of it financially. So I think it's real, and I'm going to be there when those cards release. Like, I would love to pick up a Caitlin Clark Prism rookie card. I think that'd be sick, and I hope she does take the league to the next level the way she has the chance to.
It evolved. Her story has evolved from like, oh, this phenomenal shooter, to like, oh, this phenomenal competitor, to oh, this phenomenal passer, and all the on-court stuff. And as I dig in and learn more about her, and she studied marketing at Iowa, her media training is unbelievable. Like, I don't know how she's handled it, but like her ability to handle all of this and handle the questions and everything else is like, it just like, she walks in, I see her on my TV, I listen to her talk, I'm like, this individual is special. She is a special individual. And I don't know. We like greatness as sports fans, and we appreciate it. And does Caitlin Clark still have work to do on the floor when the WNBA starts? Certainly. But the hype, I believe, much like Wimby, we've talked about Wimby and Caitlin Clark kind of together in this era. I think we've got on both sides of the coin two very, very special players that can have a significant impact on sports cards here for the next decade, or at least I hope they do.
Yeah, and we need that, man. We need that for sports cards. I think it's also cool that Caitlin is in kind of a segment that, you know, is still kind of under the radar, right? Like, WNBA cards are still kind of under the radar. So it would be cool for a player like her to be able to lift an entire segment of cards up another level or two. give more people just, you know, cards that they really want to collect and chase and all that good stuff. I think it's good for the entire hobby. So pretty special when you think about a person like a player like Wemby and a player like Caitlin, you know, kind of coming in within the same year of each other into their respective leagues and into the hobby.
So as we record this, all of game ones are finished. Every home team won. I don't need to be reminded of game one in Milwaukee. Literally, you look forward to like Christmas for like, you know, a month as a kid, and then you show up and Santa doesn't give you what you really want. That's kind of how I feel. Luckily, it's a 7-game series. Hopefully it'll be different by the time this goes live. But outside of that, because I don't want to talk about that, Nick, so don't you dare bring up Dame time and all that stuff. I'll say this about the playoffs. As I reflect on just one game, to me, what stands out is a guy we talked about last week, and that's Anthony Edwards. Wow. Like, to do what he did in that moment and the score of that game on his favorite player, like, that's how players soar to superstardom. And we'll see if it continues. But shout out to all you Timberwolves fans. That Timberwolves team has it going on both sides of the floor. And a big reason for that is their superstar Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, doing big things in the playoffs. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a really great performance. The Timberwolves look good, man. And I don't want to take anything away from Ant because he played great. He's going to have more great games. But you and I talked about this before we started recording. Game ones don't mean anything in the playoffs. It's game two that really tells you a lot about the series and what's really going to happen, in my opinion. So there's a moment that I remember. It's in my head from that Timberwolves game, and it's when Ant hit that did he hit that three late on KD, I think it was, and was kind of like flexing on him and talking all kinds of smack.
Get ready.
Yeah. And KD was just kind of like smirking, like, okay, like you can have this moment. But KD's the vet. He's been there. He's been Ant before. He's been that young guy that's kind of up and coming, putting up big games, talking smack to his idols. So I want to see what happens next game. Booker shot terribly. He only shoots 85% or better when he plays the Nuggets, apparently, because he does it every time he plays the Nuggets. He goes for 35.
And the Pacers.
Yeah, he goes for 35 and doesn't miss any shots. So I'm interested to see how game two goes. That's tonight. So by the time this comes out, they'll be, I think game three is Thursday. So it'd be, you know, waiting for game three when this episode comes out. But the Timberwolves are talented. They play really well on defense. They have an elite scorer like Ant. But like I said before, they don't have a lot of playoff experience. So if they can get through this series, I think the season is a success for them. Anything on top of that is just icing on the cake.
Yeah, I almost like want to refrain from going too deep on the playoffs because it is just one game as we record this, and it's just odd that all the home teams won. So we'll go in depth and see where we're at from a playoff perspective, kind of on the next episode. We'll know some more things. I know, and I also, because just the Pacers game was so brutal, I don't want to bring up brutal games for everybody else, but man, right before the Pacers game, I was watching the Mavs, Clippers, and I was just like, man, this doesn't look like the Mavs team either. Yes. Like, this is just, it was just all sorts of ugly everywhere. Yes.
It was, man. That was a really weird one, especially with no Kawhi. That was a weird one. Luka didn't play very well. Kyrie played pretty well, honestly, but that was about it. It was an interesting one. I didn't even pay close enough attention to realize all the home teams won, but that makes sense. Let's do a quick like rundown, predict where we'll be when this thing drops Thursday. Let's just say game twos. Do you think, I guess let's just say any teams that didn't win their game one, do you think will win their game two?
I do. I'm going to be a homer here because I'm going to game three. I'm going to say the Pacers, if you look at them, they have been phenomenal at recovering. So if they have a bad performance, they typically always win the next game. So I believe we'll be 1-1, hopefully. I'm interested. The Knicks look so good, but man, I still think like Embiid, I know he had that scare. I don't know if I'm will. I like the six. I'm going to say Knicks fans are going to hate me for this, but I'll say Philly. Yeah. Philly matches it up. Orlando looked really bad too, so I can't pick them. I think if you look at, I don't know, what that's the East. Do you have anyone on the East that you think are going to rebound? Obviously, Boston, I think, is going to continue to roll because no Jimmy Butler. That's just tough on the Heat.
That is tough. Yeah, they were getting blown out and made it somewhat close at the end there. Yeah, I like that Sixers pick. Embiid just he doesn't look the same. So wouldn't surprise me if they won. If I'm going to pick one team from the East that didn't win game one to win game two, I'm going to say the Sixers. On the West, I'm going to say the Suns. I think the Suns, and honestly, I think the Mavs. I think the Suns and the Mavs win game two. I was hoping the Pelicans would beat the Thunder game one. Now I think they're going to lose game two, and then I think the Pelicans could win both games in New Orleans. But for this next game, I'm going to say Mavs, I'm going to say Suns, and I'm going to say Sixers.
I know this is your team, but can LeBron just be like, all right, motherfuckers, we're gonna go steal one in Denver and get that team up to take one from the Nuggets, or the Nuggets just too good?
He had the chance in game one. Like he was balling out in the first quarter of that game, and then he kind of just let Anthony Davis do his thing. And Anthony Davis played well when Jokic wasn't in there. He had some big buckets on Jokic late in the game too. But Bron kind of went quiet late in the game, which was weird. He still had some buckets and some plays, but he had some sloppy turnovers that led to good transition buckets for the Nuggets. The Lakers played about as good as they're going to play, and the Nuggets played about 1.5 quarters of good basketball, maybe, and won that game. So I think the Lakers win two games max. The Nuggets should sweep the Lakers unless they have one of those silly, just like, we don't show up, there's a game, nobody's making any shots type of game, which tends to always happen. But there's no reason they should lose any games to the Lakers.
We'll see how wrong we are by the time this goes, because that's typically the case. But Knicks had some wins, me not so much. Let's jump in. Shout out your offer before we move into no recent comp stuff.
Yeah, so we got this Stacking 93 offer. So if you consign, it's good for any one consignment. So you can send as many cards or items in as you want on that one consignment, and you will get 93% payout of the total sale price. So that's like what the buyer pays. I know they have the buyer's premium and all that. What the buyer actually pays, which is the higher number, you will get 93% on everything off of the total sale price in that one consignment that you send in. The promo code is Stacking93. You can submit directly on the website, thewarfsportscards.com/consignment. There's a submit button there, kind of walks you through how to submit. The shipping address is there, all that good stuff. But you can always DM me on Instagram at thewarfsportscards if you have any questions or want to just talk through anything more. But yeah, we'll run that for, you know, probably a month or so. So jump on that if you can. But yeah, those payouts, especially under $1,000, you're not going to get 93% anywhere else.
What's fun is that just chatting with friends that are like, oh yeah, I'm using. I was literally at my nephew's birthday party at my brother's house, and like, oh yeah, I sent my cards over, and I'm like, oh, that rules. Yeah. That's fun. So it's fun to hear some people catching on that I personally know and interact with.
Yeah, ton of new people, you know, shouting out the podcast. Always positive feedback, which is very encouraging. But mentioning the promo codes as well, so it's definitely been resonating with people, and people are enjoying it.
Awesome. So let's jump into no recent comps. This might be sent back my way as I'm looking at this now, but a topic from the newsletter that you want to go deeper on.
Yeah. So, you know, I ask my group, my online community, every week I do an Ask Me Anything, and they can ask me literally anything, and I'll feature one of those questions in the newsletter. And this week I picked our friend Drake's question, which I was poking fun at Drake because Drake asked like the best questions all the time. And I picked the simplest question he's probably ever asked on any sports card content format ever. All he asked was, what does a typical day for you look like? So I answered that in the newsletter. I just thought it would be cool to kind of talk about what a day for me looks like. You can read that in the newsletter. I'll give you like a quick little overview. I broke down my whole day, but usually it's up by 4 a.m., work as much as I can, help with the kids as much as I can. I nap my youngest daughter every day. I hold her for a nap every day for like an hour, which is like super special to me, but also kind of breaks up the day as well. I try to be done by 4 so that I can like, I try to be done by 4 and like not go back to my phone the rest of the night, spend time with the family and kids. I almost always end up like just checking my phone at like 6:30, just to make sure there's nothing urgent that I don't need to get to. But it's been an evolution since I started consignment like 4 years ago, where it was just like work 16 hours a day, drive myself crazy, not you know, the best husband and dad that I could be. And it's evolved into how can I be as efficient as possible, draw boundaries, get the phone away from us as much as possible. And that's kind of where we are today. So I thought it would be cool for you to kind of give a glimpse into what a day for you looks like now that you're in the sports card biz now.
Yes. Shout out Drake, Drake's PC, Pick Six Pod. Go check it out. Drake is the ultimate question asker across all podcasts. So I'm not surprised by it. So very routine oriented. I wake up at 4:40 every day, get up, put on my running shoes, get a run in. After that, I'm in the shower, rushing down to try to get organized because I'm the commuter of the children, to and from school. So I'm trying to like, my wife and I are kind of tag teaming all the tasks in the morning. Getting her kids' breakfast ready and everything. My wife grabs our infant to feed her. I'm dealing with her toddler, which adding potty training to the whole mix, it's like a whole nother dynamic. So we go to the potty, get that process going, brush the teeth, pick out a dress. She's very opinionated on what she wants to wear. That's always like a fun but also stressful chunk of my day. So I'm like, let's get this rolling a little bit. Throw on Gabby's dollhouse, something. And then now I've got both of them going to the same daycare. So to drive about 20 minutes, but it's fun because I go through downtown past like Gainbridge and Lucas Oil where the Colts and Pacers play. And my toddler talks about it, which is fun. But then when I get back to the house, it is how do I get as much stuff done in a short amount of time? And it's kind of a balancing act between stacking slab stuff and companies that I'm helping with from a marketing perspective. I've got a gig with a new agency and it's phenomenal, really enjoying it. But I'm trying to separate being like, okay, I don't have to be in this 24/7. I've got stacking slab stuff to be dedicated towards. So a lot of it is, work trying to get myself out of the content, which I love, but actually like working on the business itself. So like, how do I grow this thing? How do I grow revenue? Who can I collaborate with? What do sponsorships look like? So there's like a business development side to this that I don't ever really talk about much, but it's a lot of conversations, just talking to people, exploring opportunities. And so literally like from 8 to 4, it's nonstop work. And then once 4 o'clock hits, I'm like, you, Nick, I try to like shut it down. It's time to go be a dad, take care of my kids, put them down. And I usually don't like pop back on my phone until the kids are down. But I'm on the couch watching sports, wrestling something, and usually just like pass out and it's like rinse and repeat all over again. But yeah. I love it. Efficiency is a key word. Part of the reason why I consign my cards is I want to be as efficient as possible. If I'm spending time like actually enjoying the cards and the hobby myself, I want to be doing the things that I really love. So that's buying cards and that's, you know, posting cards, communicating with other people about cards. So yeah, it's fun, but it's kind of wild. Like I have this feeling sometimes where I need to like wake up and be like, dude, you're like getting to talk about cards and like, you know, help support your family. And so I never really thought I'd be in that space. So the fact that I'm here, I feel very fortunate and appreciate everyone who supports Auction Talk and everything else. It means a ton. You make me really happy by, you know, giving me the opportunity and the space to share kind of our passion and energy. And then obviously just awesome partners like Nick to share it with. It's been a fun ride.
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. And Brett does, like, if you guys have not checked out his Patreon group, Brett cranks out so much good content there that you won't see on Instagram. Like, I'm always like, man, how is he putting together so much good content, like, regularly, like, daily? And it's in that group, man. So go check that out. That's not just me trying to pump him up. That's
gas me up, man.
Yeah, I can gas you up all day, man, because I'm like, man, I get jealous. I'm like, I can't do that. This dude is cranking out some content, and it's all good stuff. So kudos to you. You can tell, like, how hard you work. And, you know, I thought there's some interesting tidbits there. Like, you talked about getting away from the content and like, so you can focus on doing, like, the actual work. I think that's a common misconception for people that maybe don't operate a business in the hobby. They think, like, I don't know, they see the content and they think they know what happens behind the scenes of a business, but, like, you have no idea, man. Like, I run through these phases where, like, I don't have time to do the content because there's so much behind the scenes. You do a really great job of being consistent with your content. That's something I struggle with, but there's so much behind the scenes that it's hard to really explain what you do sometimes unless you're doing it. But you're right. It's really, like, a lot of conversations. You know, yours are probably different than mine, but same boat. Like, I'm just talking to people pretty much nonstop all day. I've even had to block that off to where, like, all right, I'm going to answer messages, like, in this 45 minutes and then this 45, like, two or three times a day so that I don't get lost just answering messages for 2.5 hours straight. But some good insights there.
I love it. Yeah. And it's, I'm sure you can relate to this. It literally is not all roses. It's hard. And I'm ambitious. I think you're ambitious. You want it to grow faster always than it is, but
yep,
it doesn't. So sometimes it feels like you're pushing a boulder up a mountain, and it's hard work, but it's fun. So it's nice to, and why I enjoy so much talking with other business owners in the hobby. It's so nice to be able to learn and relate. Like, I have learned so much from other people who've been doing this way longer than me, not just in content, but just doing it in the space. And there's just a wealth of knowledge here. And there's so, we as a hobby focus so much on the negative and the bad people. There are so many great business owners in this hobby, and I won't even do it justice by spending time, but people that literally will say, hey, I want to help you, I want to share. And there's so much of that good stuff that happens behind the scenes. And I don't think I could spend time in the space if I didn't feel that energy from other people every day. So this question got me fired up. So
no,
thanks, Drake.
Yeah, Drake. I love that, man. You can feel your passion behind it. And I'm glad you brought up, like, how willing other business owners are to be helpful to people like us that, you know, just started something or are changing, you know, the direction of their business, because we know how busy we are. They're just as busy as us. And they are, like, going out of the way to say, hey, can I help you? Like, how can I help you? How's this going? Like, you know, this is what worked for me. Like, that type of stuff. You're right, man. It doesn't get highlighted enough. And just hobby businesses, throw content creators that are getting paid to create content, like, anybody making money off of the hobby outside of, like, just buying and selling cards, they're putting in a lot of work that doesn't get seen and probably doesn't really get appreciated. So just take a second to appreciate those people if you can.
I love it. I'm going to actually just move into the cards because we went kind of long with that one. If that's cool, we can just right into it. Let me share my screen here.
I guess that's what people are here for, right? The cards?
Yeah, I think so. That's... it's funny. I've been talking with a few other people, just about, like, some collaboration stuff, which people will know more soon, but it, without fail, I continue to come back to when we're thinking about topics and stuff, I'm just like, you know what? Like, it'll all be good if we just focus in on the cards. And I think so much of us forget about that, but, like, we're all here because we want to talk about sports cards, right?
Right. Yes.
All right. First card on my list this week, just because I can't not see one of these things, and especially of a Hall of Fame player, and not talk about it. PWCC ending on Sunday is the 2012 Panini Prism Gold Tony Gonzalez out of 10 Gold Prism in an SGC 9.5. You know, when we've talked about Tony Gonzalez before, there was that, think Chrome, Topps Chrome Chiefs card of his that was awesome. And we were talking about how great of a player he was. I think like you forget about Tony Gonzalez on the Falcons and how like, you know, bleed into the Panini era. His cards, he got Falcons cards. And I like forgot about, I lose as time passes, I lose like card manufacturer years, players, when they were on different teams. And when this card hit me, it was like, I don't know. It's not like, it wasn't like I anticipated him to be in a Chiefs jersey, but it was almost, what I anticipated was like, wow, Tony Gonzalez was around for this set. And so I thought that was cool. One of the most prolific tight ends in NFL history. And as we're talking about this, we moved right past the NFL draft talk, which is fine, but I know there's, you know, tight ends being talked about this year in this draft, but like, I don't know, if you look at a guy who did it and a guy you're trying to replicate, if you're drafting Brock Bowers in the first round of the NFL draft, Tony Gonzalez is probably a good place to start. And if you're a Gonzalez collector, I'm guessing this is a card that's on your list.
Yeah, for sure, man. And he had a good stint with the Falcons. So you think he played four or five years? One, two, three, four. It looks like 5 years.
Was it five years?
Yeah, it was 5 years, man.
Jeez.
From 09 through 2013. It looks like he had like 4,000 yards. One, two, three, four. About like probably 400 catches. Like he had some stats later in his career. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people would argue that he's the best tight end of all time. I think there's a handful of people you could argue that for, but yeah, obviously significant set. It's interesting. It's in an SGC holder. It would look better in a PSA holder with the red jersey. Let's just say that like the red on the PSA holder would make this thing pop. But yeah, special card, special player. I think it's only at $68 now, which is it's only Monday. This will probably be a different price when this goes live Thursday, this podcast, but curious to see what this goes for. If it goes for a reasonable price, somebody's going to be very happy.
Dude, you saying special card, special player, man. I've got the sketch. Are you up on Sketch from the internet? The internet sensation Sketch, the Madden player.
Oh no, who's Sketch?
Oh god, everyone out. We'll talk about it off camera. But you literally like basically stole one of his catchphrases. And everyone out there is doing the sketch right now as we're nice. Talking through this. You mentioned, I didn't want to, but let's just slightly. So PSA obviously owns SGC now. That was big news. It almost feels like a fever dream at this point. But undeniably, like most of my cards that I've sold are, you know, in PSA holders, some in BGS, few in SGC. It always just seems like I look at this, and I don't know what this card's going to end up, but I look at an SGC 9.5 and I think about like a PSA 10 and just how different of a story that probably looks, even though it's a card with 10 copies. And I don't know. I'm just saying that just because it's something that I always feel where it's like sometimes like if cards are in SGC holders that are rare and scarce, it might give a collector an opportunity to get it less than maybe what the market commands. And it's just like the PSA premium thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think there's definitely a chance to get this at a price that's more reasonable than if it was in a PSA holder. There was a little lag there because I wanted to look up if any of these have sold recently, and because I don't remember any copies. Yeah, it looks like the last Gold Prism Tony Gonzalez to sell was in September of 2022, and then there was one in July 2022. Both raw sold for between $600 and $800. So
they sold for $600 and $800 then.
Yeah. In 2022.
I just based on what we've seen, I feel like this card's going to do pretty well based on the last time it sold. It would be my instinct.
It could. It could. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like the set is on fire. He's like I said, top three tight end of all time, probably. I'm very curious to see what this does, but man, if you could get it in this, if you could somehow get it in that 600 to 800 range where one of the Rawls did 2 years ago, I think that's an amazing buy, but
totally,
it could do over 1,000 easily. And we wouldn't be surprised that way too.
Next card for me, sticking with football. I saw this card again on PWCC 2003 SP Authentic Troy Polamalu gotta love the serial numbering then out of 2200 PSA 10. And part of the reason why I picked this card was I don't think have talked enough about Troy Polamalu, and this card is super cool because he's just in an iconic pose, just looking to track down whoever's got the ball and rip their head off. But there's an era of time as a Colts fan where there was not a player that I least looked forward to playing than Troy Polamalu. And he was just this ferocious NFL player, Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. And I recently heard him on a podcast, and you know, a player that's this good, he spent the time not talking about how good he was, but talking about how he spent time watching film of Ed Reed, Bob Sanders, some of the other safeties that were in the game trying to pick and pull pieces. And it was like the most humbling thing I've ever heard, because here is one of the best players that I think I've ever seen play the game of football talking about how much he appreciated other players in his position, which I thought was super cool. When I know defensive players don't get a ton of love, but like when I think about this era of football, when I think about Ray Lewis, I think about Ed Reed, I think about Troy Polamalu, like these are like the best players from this era. I don't care if they don't play offense, like they defined that era of football. So when I saw this card, I was like, I'm picking this one just so I can get a minute to talk about Troy Polamalu and how great he was.
I love it, man. It's the card isn't showing up on the screen again.
Again, man.
Second card that we start with. That's weird. But yeah, man, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, Polamalu himself is memorable just for how good he was, the way he played. And I mean, let's be honest, like, people aren't going to forget that hair, man. Like, people... he's going to be one of the most remembered safeties ever, like always. In that era, like when you were just reeling off those names, I didn't really realize how like elite that era was with defensive players, and especially safeties. Like Bob Sanders would have been the best safety in a lot of eras, and he was probably like the third best safety in that era because you had so many elite safeties at that time. So that's super interesting. Like, Polamalu is a guy that I have no attachment to the Steelers, and I would love to start a collection of a guy like Polamalu. Especially, this card is like a $500 card ish. I mean, that seems, even though there's 2,200 of these, like there's probably not a ton in circulation. There's probably a decent amount of PSA 10s, but I wouldn't imagine too many are in circulation. I would assume he's probably not in every 2003 product, being a defensive player. Rookie, a lot of the defensive players get left out of stuff, or especially early on in their career. So, you know, I think would be a great place to start if you were going to start a Polamalu collection. But I think it'd be interesting to get together a, you know, like a all-time defensive players from that era, or like a all-time safeties from that era collection going. It would be a fun collection and probably not too expensive.
I would love to see, if you're out there and you've got one, share it with me.
Sure.
This one, talking some basketball, Paolo Banchero, 2022-2023, Panini Noir, Rookie Association Edition, one of one, ends on eBay on Thursday, the day this goes live. I picked this card because we haven't really talked about Banchero a lot, and I don't know, I just saw it as one of one, and it's a product Noir, which Noir is a funny product where, like, if you go into a hobby shop the day it comes out, it's like super expensive, but it just seems like one of those products that doesn't necessarily like hold its value on the secondary market over a long period of time. But this card I thought was super sharp, and maybe it's just because I'm a one of one guy, but it's got the Magic logo in the background. He's got a shot going. He is one of those guys that I think when I'm thinking about legitimate young players that have proven to be legitimate really early in their career. I watched this guy just like decimate the Pacers a couple times this year. I'm like, this guy's really good. And he obviously made the All-Star game, and the Magic are in the playoffs right now. So I just wanted to shout this out because I think he's a hell of a player and a really cool card. And, you know, it's at 112.50 with 3 days, 6 hours left. I have no clue where this thing is going to end, but if you want a unique kind of Banchero piece, this might be the one for you.
Yeah, really cool card aesthetically. I think it's interesting in most cases, like if there wasn't a Wemby or a Chet right now, like this would be the guy. You know what I mean? It's crazy how he gets a little bit overshadowed just because of who else is out there right now. But yeah, he's played really well early in his career, and this is a really cool looking card I didn't know about.
All right. Your first.
Yeah, this is the 2019 Panini Prism Black Gold out of 5. Jason Tatum, BGS 9.5. This is on PWCC and Sunday. Really cool card. Affordable. Like, I think this did like $1,900 last April. It should do less than that. His stuff has kind of come down since then. Interesting timing, being in the first round. Like, not a lot of price movement really happens for first round series, you know, especially when everybody knows the Celtics should dominate the Heat in this first round. So it's not like there's going to be any surprises to where this card would sell for more than it should, but could be an opportunity to buy them, to buy a rare, desirable Tatum card that's going to be a lot more affordable than a rookie selection. And who knows what happens this playoffs.
So the Celtics, I think, are in the driver's seat and controller of their own destiny to finally get over the hump and win a championship. If the Celtics win a championship, how do you think that changed the perception of Jason Tatum? We all view Jason Tatum as one of the league's best players, but like, how big of an impact do you think a championship could have on his cards?
It's an interesting question, because the big question is how much is still baked in to his prices. I would think at this point, a lot of that has come out of his prices, because we're 7-8 years into his career now, or 7 years, whatever the math is. I would think it would do a lot for his market, at least in the short term. And I mean, his resume now is elite, like multiple all NBAs, multiple conference finals. He's been to the finals. So adding a championship to that would do a lot now, because now he has a higher floor. And then if he adds anything else to that in his career that he should have a lot left of in, you know, he can just continue to elevate.
They are really good. And so is he. We talked about Jaromir Jagr this week, or last week. This week, we've got a Mario Lemieux car. What do we got here, and why are we picking it?
It's the 01 Topps Chrome Black Refractor out of 50, Mario Lemieux, PSA 9. I touched on this card. There's only two graded copies of this in existence. They're both PSA 9s. The other PSA 9 sold a few weeks ago, and I featured it in the newsletter and went really deep on it. This is a kind of like an underappreciated card in the hobby. This is the OG Topps Chrome Black, the most rare Topps Chrome Black refractor that's out there. Only 50 copies. There's not much Topps Chrome hockey out there. I think there was 2 to 3 years of Topps Chrome hockey. I actually think 01 was the first year of Topps Chrome hockey. So it's a very limited selection. And the fact that the other PSA 9 sold recently, it did like $1,400. You might be able to get this one for 11 or 12. And I think it's a card that could hold value long term. But this is the other copy is the first copy of this card in any condition to ever surface. This is the second copy. So these never surface. I would buy this and lock it up for a long time. But I think it's a card that people could catch on to over time and could really skyrocket in value.
I love it. The black, just aesthetically, black jerseys, yeah. Black borders, pretty sharp freaking love card. This next one, I saw this and just felt a wave of nostalgia. I felt like a kid looking at this card.
Yeah, this is the 04 Ultimate Collection dual game jersey, game use patches out of 25, Dan Marino and Joe Montana, PSA 8. So really sick patch for Marino. Like, you get a little bit of the Dolphins logo, which are always cool colors and cool logo. Nice, looks like pretty used patch there for Montana. Not much going on with the pictures of the players themselves, but the card with the patches in it and the limited quantity with only 25 copies, pretty special. This copy sold for $1,000 in October, and it was a bin, so I'm really curious to see what happens here. Now that it's at auction, you know, 6 months later, but really cool patches. Some of the best quarterbacks ever.
No doubt about it. Such a cool card. Let's jump over to the cards selling through the Wharf Sports cards. Timely, topical.
Yes. We are going to get some draft talk in.
Love it.
This is the 2023 Bowman Chrome University, the true gold refractor out of 50. Marvin Harrison. This is a PSA 9. It's a population of 4. There's 8 PSA 10s. We've seen a few PSA 10 sell sporadically over the last, you know, since these have released. The last PSA 10 did like $265. I actually sold a raw copy of mine for 160 like a week ago. So the Raws are doing like 150-ish. PSA 10 is doing like 265. He should go top five in the draft. I do that this ends Sunday, which would be after he gets drafted. So I do think, depending on where he goes, I think there could be some excitement and like, oh, I want to see what Marvin Harrison cards are out there. This is one of the cards I would go to. Honestly, probably one of the best Bowman Chrome cards of his you can get right now, because a lot of the reds and some of the more rare autos are kind of locked up. I don't know if any of those will surface. But yeah, this, I mean, $150, $200 card. It's got the Bowman Chrome first on there. I think this is a really cool and could be a special card long term.
Looks like if I were a betting man, he'd end up in Arizona. I hope I'm on team. Hey, Colts, give up everything you got to get in a position to get him. A special player, man. Yes. I like him. All right, next one. Just love these jerseys.
The Dream, yes. 1997 Skybox Premium Star Rubies out of 50. Akeem Olajuwon, PSA 8. He's got the later 90s Rockets jerseys, what Brett's referring to there. But the population on these is super interesting. So recently, I think it was the beginning of April, actually, a BGS9 auctioned with Golden and did like little over 4,000. And a bin got hit on eBay for this card for a PSA 8 for $2,688. Super interesting, because if you really know 90s cards like these, PSA grades tougher than BGS on most of these, like the rubies, the credentials, the PMGs. PSA is always a tougher grade. There's 15 total graded copies of this card between all the grading companies. Only PSA and BGS have graded any. The PSA 8 is the highest PSA copy. There's three of those, and there's only seven total graded with PSA. The BGS 9 is a pop four, and there's eight graded with Beckett. There's none higher than a BGS 9, and the BGS 9 did $4,089. Like, honestly, in most cases, a PSA 8 and on a card like this is usually going to sell for like right in line with the BGS 9, sometimes more when it's the highest in the pop like this is. But yeah, I think this is a chance where if you're really concerned about like the condition of the card, it's probably the best condition of this card that you're going to be able to find.
This is one I'm not sure I had seen before, but super sharp. I love to see the Dream cards. You don't see them enough, I feel like, these days.
Yeah, and there's also, coincidentally enough, there's a 97 Tim Duncan rubies, and it's his jersey number copy too. So I love that year of rubies. But two of the best big / power forward players of all time, really.
All right, I know a couple collectors who, if they already have this, they've probably got their eyes on it, but I want to talk about special players. Here's one. What card we got?
This card is sweet, man. It's the 2012 Fleer Retro Fleer Showcase Row 2 Legacy out of 150. Alexander Ovechkin. And this is a pop one PSA 10. We touched on the retros before. I think it was a Gretzky PMG. I think this card is really special because Ovechkin, there was no 90s Fleer Showcase Legacies for hockey. So Ovechkin doesn't have another Fleer Showcase Legacy card, except for this 2012 retro. I don't know if they've made some since. I'm not really sure, but this is the original retro legacy for Ovechkin. They only made the row twos in these retro series. They didn't have row zero, row one, row two, and all that stuff. So there's a lot less limited, a lot less supply out there, which I think it makes it even more desirable. Plus, this being a pop one PSA 10, I think is cool. And it's the design that they used, that they would have used if there was a 90s original legacy card for hockey. So I think it's a really cool card, and it should only do, I don't know, $300 to $500 or something. So it's very affordable and really cool card. And it's an instance where I think the retro isn't necessarily that diluted, because there wasn't an original and there's not a bunch more other retros like it.
Yeah, I think it's just fun to see these cards in 2012 that have the throwback to, you know, 90s cards. And I know maybe the throwback isn't for anyone, but based on what you just described in positioning of this card, it makes a lot of sense on why this is a card, especially if you're a Ovechkin fan and a collector. Super cool. We got two more. All right, we're looking at the league's MVP. The reigning league's MVP. What's the card?
two-time MVP, 2018 select premier level Zebra Prism. It's the die cut. It's Lamar Jackson, rookie card, PSA 10. This card sold late in February, so it would have been after the Super Bowl. I don't know. I don't think it was this exact same copy, but it sold for just over $1,000 was the last sale. Where are we at with Lamar, man? Like, I just think it's always like a confusing debate, man. And I don't know where we are. I think people are disappointed that he didn't play great against the Chiefs. But I always come back, like, same draft class. I look at a guy like Josh Allen and his Concours Zebra PSA 10 sells for more than 2x this card. And I see that stuff and I just don't understand it. And I don't know if people are pointing to the playoff success. I mean, Allen's won a few more games, but I don't know, man. What are your thoughts on where's the hobby at with Lamar, and is it ever going to change, or does he have to win a Super Bowl for him to matter to people?
I think the challenging thing is the era for which he is playing in and thriving in, and that's the Mahomes era. And it's just really hard to break through when you've got someone so dominant like Patrick Mahomes has been. I feel like Lamar, he's still so young, but just, I don't feel this. I feel like he's certainly one of the best league's best players, but it just seems like he is the guy right now, where I feel like in basketball, it feels like that with Jason Tatum. Like, similarly, like, even though Tatum's super young, they've accomplished so much. It just feels like the next logical step. And that's why I asked the question about Tatum's cards. It just feels like the next logical step is a Super Bowl. And so I'm not sure until that time comes, especially after having his second MVP, which is insane. Like, there aren't a lot of players with two MVPs. I just feel like it's going to hold him back. I think he's a great player. His time, it's just tough. It's the Mahomes era. We're all living in it.
Yep. Yeah. Maybe he's just one of those guys that people are going to think differently of, like, long after his career. But we will see.
All right, last card on the list.
2001 Bowman Chrome Refractor. This is the Ichiro rookie card, BGS 9.5. It's a min gem, so there's three 9.5 subgrades and a 9 subgrade. Just a really cool card. Obviously, we talked about Ichiro. These cards are a lot more rare than I would have thought. Like, the BGS 9.5s, I mean, there's like 60 of them, I think, but there's only been like 13 BGS 9.5s that have sold in the last like 8 years. There's only been a handful of PSA 10s that have sold in the last 10 years. So the higher grade copies of this, just, they really don't surface that often. A true gem did just over 1700 in January. So I would anticipate this doing around, you know, maybe 13 to 15. I don't know how much that extra 0.5 means to people on a true gem. But a card you can't go wrong with on a player that's going to be important for a long time.
I have an infatuation with learning and seeing Ichiro cards just because I loved watching him play so much. So he is like the definition of a player who's just like legacy should always be front and center, I think. And it's, to me, as a casual baseball fan, it's super cool to see some of his rookie cards pop up recently. I've been enjoying that, and know that there are collectors out there who go nuts for his stuff too. So we're bringing up baseball cards here when we can. So, Nick, appreciate that. Another auction talk under our belt. We came in at a pretty good time here. We're not too long, but, you know, enough for the people to enjoy. Nick, anything you got in closing?
No, man. An hour 20. That's like our goal. So we squeezed it in there. now I'm going over 120 or an hour 20, just rambling here, but always feels like we have 5 hours worth of stuff to talk about and we cram it in. So hope you guys are enjoying it. Just looking forward to this every week. Really curious to see what happens in the NBA playoffs this week and where everybody lands in the draft, how people react with card prices, what cards we see posted on Instagram after the Chargers draft, whoever they draft. And, you know, here's all my Justin Herbert cards. So busy and fun week in the hobby, man. Appreciate it. Sit back and enjoy.
Talk to you next week, Nick.
Thanks, man.
Man, I dig these chats. Nick is a knowledgeable guy. I love going through the format. I love the planning, the preparation. If you're looking for someone to consign your cards with, look no further than my man, Nick, Stacking 93. Link is in the show notes. We've got more auction talk coming at you next week. Collector conversation dropping tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss that. Appreciate you tuning in and all the support for the Stacking Slabs podcast. And if you're listening till the end and you're still here, join the damn Patreon group. Show your support. Appreciate it. Take care.